The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Acuma, its board of directors, its management staff, or its members. The podcast discussion presented is conversational in nature and for general information only.
Hello and welcome to Acuma's OnPoint Podcast, the policy series, where we focus on policy issues impacting the credit union mortgage industry. I'm your host, Peter Benjamin. Today's episode is being brought to you by LenderPrice, the most modern and proven product and pricing engine in lending. Whether it's enhancing the pricing experience or efficiently matching homebuyers with the ideal loan program, LenderPrice empowers all credit unions to excel and innovate in today's dynamic market. Their cost-effective pricing engine provides modern APIs that deliver seamless integrations, full product and rate support, custom workflows, and it's simple and easy to use for loan originators. LenderPrice is proud to sponsor the Acuma OnPoint Podcast policy series, where discussions on the policy issues impacting credit union mortgage lenders take center stage. Get to know LenderPrice and book a demo at www.lenderprice.com. Now, joining us today as our resident expert, Leah Dempsey, shareholder with Brownsea. Leah, welcome to the podcast, and how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thank you so much for having me, and looking forward to our discussion.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, we've said this before, whether it's past podcasts or webinars, really since late February, early March, things in DC are picking up. And again, here we are, end of April. Again, there's a lot happening. So do me a favor, walk us through everything happening in DC that's impacting our listeners, the credit union mortgage professional.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think just housing in general remains a very popular topic in DC. It's definitely a campaign talking point, as we've talked a lot about before on other podcasts. And we're continuing to see the progression of a lot of these regulatory actions that are either being finalized or proposed. It seems like on a weekly basis, we see something new rolled out by the administration. And really, the latest focus has been on some of these issues related to title closing costs. We're expecting an RFI from the CFPB that's going to be talking about mortgage closing costs. And that's sort of a new area that wasn't necessarily under the focus of, the CFPB or the administration anytime in recent years, but it really fits into their category of potential junk fees and just these fees that are making consumers' lives, in their mind more difficult. But I think, as we've talked about before, in many ways are often necessary for credit unions and other businesses that are trying to provide services.
Right. And so for that, it's, we've talked about this, our last time around, correct me if I'm wrong, but Biden mentioned junk fees in his State of the Union, right? Chopra most certainly has been put out several blog posts about junk fees and how the CFPB is really interested in it. And, on the surface, you would think, okay, credit card late fees is a big talking point to that. But So what you're saying is this RFI is really going to start focus on start including mortgage closing costs and trying to find out whether or not there are true junk fees in the mortgage process. Did I understand that right?
Yes. Yeah. I think we'll probably see a press release and more on this soon. But I've heard that it could be as broad as costs related to your credit score, basically anything that there's a cost associated with in the closing process. The CFPB is thinking about, the administration's thinking about, they're really getting into the weeds on these things. And the regulators are all going to be testifying in Congress and making their points on these issues. Actually, this week, Sandra Thompson is testifying in the Senate Banking Committee. Adrian Todman, who's the acting HUD secretary, is also testifying this week. So I think after this week, yet another hearing where we're going to hear a lot more about ideas in the housing industry, we may even have some more food for thought about other areas that are going to be in the focus over the next few months.
I know this is a long shot. It's probably just a random question, so please forgive me. But I understand that, yeah, they're looking at junk fees, right, for the sake of, you know, fees for an actual service, right? Will this ever, or has there been discussions on potential revisions to TRID? I mean, as silly as that sounds, right? TRID did establish, you know, tolerance thresholds for different fees, right? No tolerance, zero tolerance, and everything in between, right? So do you foresee if it remains a Democratic CFPB, Chopra's still in there, do you see potential changes to TRID as a result of this?
I mean, that's a great point, particularly if there's a second Biden administration. They've done a lot, arguably, in the past 4 years, and have gotten through a very hefty wish list of, you know, consumer advocacy groups and other groups that have been targeting these fees. So I think logically, if they have another 4 years to focus on additional fees, something like that could definitely be pulled in. It's really about that time to probably take a look at TRID again anyway, just because that whole rulemaking happened several years ago, and you know, and it depends on the agency, but certain agencies have specific timeframes, as you know, at like the NCUA, where they take another look at prior rules. The CFPB doesn't have a specific timeframe for when they review past rules, but what we've seen and what we think is probably going to happen is it will be similar to what we see at other agencies, where it's like the 5 or 10 year mark on when a rule was finalized before. So I do think that if there's 4 more years of a Biden administration, that could be something that could pop up.
Okay. All right. So what else is happening? I know you want to talk AI. So let's kind of pivot to AI and everything happening with that. And if I remember correctly, you know, FHFA just recently appointed their chief AI officer, right? So obviously there's some movement. Does that mean that we could possibly see some regulation coming out with regards to AI, of course, faster than what we would see legislation? So what's happening in the world with AI?
Well, I totally agree with you. I definitely think the regulators are probably going to act first, because Congress can't get their act together on much of anything. This week is another example of that, where there's a huge debate again about the funding for Ukraine and Israel. There may even be a motion to vacate again, and we could arguably go through that whole situation again in the coming weeks. We'll have more clarity on that by the end of the week. But long story short, Congress is probably not, as we've talked about before, coming to a consensus on this. So groups like FHFA and the CFPB are definitely cutting around the edges. There's also a initiative among the House Financial Services Committee that they're talking to different stakeholders in what's called the AI Working Group. And we've heard that in early May, the Financial Institutions Subcommittee, which is the subcommittee that has jurisdiction over credit unions, will be meeting with stakeholders and learning more about how credit unions are using AI and some of their concerns for future regulation. So one would hope that, you know, a group like FHFA and the Health Financial Services Committee would be coordinating on some of that and learning from each other about how stakeholders are using these processes. That being said, with the dysfunction in D.C., I wouldn't count on that. I think from what I've heard after the State of the Union, the Republicans were a little bit surprised by some of what came out related to FHFA on particularly this new pilot program related to Title. They did not have a heads up necessarily on that. And I think there's maybe a little bit less trust between the House Republicans and the FHFA and the administration post State of the Union, because they had some surprises in that they were not expecting. And they also took some shots across the bow. So as we're moving towards the election, we don't expect FHFA to slow down. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if we, in one of these upcoming proposals, see something related to that.
Okay. So, I mean, we talked about in the past, you know, regulators or odds are going to be the ones that implement some type of AI regulation, for lack of a better word, AI policy, you know, first, right? So FHFA, which is obviously going to trickle down to the GSEs. Are you seeing, you know, FHFA work with CFPB, working with NCUA on establishing clear lines of this is what the standard is going to be?
That would be the hope, that they would work across agencies. My concern is that something like that might not happen, and that we would see one agency, like particularly the CFPB, gives me heartburn in this area, that they would do something like a blog post that creates precedent without creating precedent. You know, when there are regulations coming out by rulemaking, there are in certain instances requirements to consult with prudential regulators. For example, if the CFPB is doing a rulemaking, they arguably should be consulting with the NCUA. We've heard that in the past, that line of communication has not always been as clear as it should be. And sometimes I think NCUA gets a heads up at the very last minute, or a very minimal heads up on what the CFPB is doing. So while I would hope that all the regulators are talking on these things, I think the thing that keeps probably most chief compliance officers up at night and compliance professionals is that one of these agencies will do a tweet or a blog post or something less researched that makes their lives much more complicated.
And so it's safe to say that tweets or blog posts now have to be considered policy.
You know, it depends on how you look at the situation. I mean, it doesn't necessarily create any kind of administrative record that needs to be considered by the courts, but it is giving, for those that are, you know, particularly those that are supervised by certain regulators and who are undergoing exams, it gives some insight into what they're thinking. So they could basically put a blog post out or put a tweet out, and they are basically telling you, when, you know, when we come in next to examine you, this is what's on our mind and this is what we're thinking about. So it's not a rule. It's not the force and effect of law, but it's something that could come up in an exam.
But it's more going to be a, hey, FYI. It's not going to be that a finding, but it's more going to be like a, hey, FYI, next time we're in here, make sure it's fixed.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So AI, there's been, it's tough to say, it's like some movement, but really no movement whatsoever with regards to AI. All right. What else is happening? What else is going on in DC?
Just talk a little bit about the FCC and some of the work that they're doing. We talked a few weeks ago about this new order that they have related to revoking consent.
Yep.
And there was, you know, in a small paragraph in a comment from the NCLC, a suggestion about requiring that there's an automated opt-out mechanism on every call that contains an artificial or pre-recorded message. So currently, this is required if you're calling landlines, but it's not required if you're calling cell phones. So this was just kind of another example of a one or two word sentence sort of slipped into something that creates, you know, probably some compliance headaches and burdens related to opting out when you're talking to consumers on the phone. So this is something that I just think credit unions in general should keep an eye on the FCC. We've seen multiple things come out in the last few months that create some new compliance complexities. And they, you know, one issue with the FCC, and this kind of goes back to our earlier conversation about the other agencies, is they particularly are not necessarily focused on financial services providers, because that's not their bailiwick. Their bailiwick is the carriers. You know, they think of people like Verizon and AT&T as their constituents, not necessarily credit unions around the country. So when they are making some of these changes or working with consumer groups to make some of these changes, they, even more so, I would say, than some of the other regulators, are not necessarily thinking about unintended consequences and all the burdens that it would place on you know, a small credit union that may be making these types of calls and have to come up with a whole new regimen. So this, I know that stakeholders are going to be weighing in with the FCC on that one, but there's that issue. There's the continuing kind of figuring out what's going on with revoking consent. And we're still waiting on another order from the FCC related to call blocking and labeling, which just in general makes life a little bit harder when you have more complexity and cost when you're trying to talk to your own members.
No, I mean, okay, so knowing that the FCC doesn't really focus on, I must say, I'm going to include banks in this conversation. So credit unions and banks, right? Are you seeing that the NCUA, the FDIC, OCC are pushing back and saying, hey, you know, these revisions to the TCPA are not good for our members, our constituents? Is that happening, or are they just kind of going along with it, knowing they have no control over this?
That's a great point. You know, I haven't seen anything like that in quite a while. At one point, several years ago, the NCUA weighed in on a TCPA issue. And I think it was extremely helpful to have that regulator to regulator conversation going on. They have kind of stayed out of everything going on related to call blocking and labeling. But I feel like that's a great point that we should all be thinking about, that maybe that's something that credit unions should maybe be talking to the NCUA about if they're having these issues.
Because it's interesting, right? Because you kind of said, okay, well, landline versus mobile or cellular, right? It's what percentage of the population still has a landline, right?
Exactly.
You know, everywhere that I complete an application for, I'm putting my cell phone down, right? You know, and if it's a joint application with my wife, right, I'm putting my cell phone down and she's putting her cell phone down. There's no home number. So it seems like a lot. I don't want to speak out of turn, nor do I want to get in trouble, but it seems like, you know, they're designing this based off of an old way of thinking, right? Like if your cell phone's out there, you know, you got to protect yourself in some way, shape or form, because they'll just keep harassing you.
Yeah. And you know, another problem that is related to this specific issue is if a consumer opts out, you know, say they're getting a collections call that they're not as excited about and they opt out, does that mean they're opting out of every single call from the credit union? Are they opting out of their fraud alerts? Are they opting out for their reminder about their monthly mortgage payment? It's not really clear, and the FCC doesn't get into the weeds on that. So some of these broad pronouncements that we're seeing coming out of there really could be harmful to credit union members as well.
All right. What else you got?
You know, I think just in general, trying to figure out what the last few, it sounds funny, people outside of DC laugh about this. I had a meeting on the Hill yesterday where a Hill staffer was talking about the fact that, you know, since we're heading to the election, there was one more activity that they were going to do in May, and they were going to kind of call it a year because they're going to have off the whole month of October and the whole month of August. And I could see this small business owner, you know, nearly have a heart attack hearing Congress talk about basically that they're shutting the doors for business coming up pretty soon. But it really is, that's actually is kind of the case in an election year. And we're already hearing that the House Financial Services Committee, which is the main credit union committee, as I mentioned, is probably only going to have about two more markups before the election, and they're probably not going to do any after the election. So the window's really starting to close on some of the legislative activity for this year. But people do have their eyes ahead to the fall, where they will be passing the National Defense Authorization Act, which is kind of one of the main vehicles for moving anything at this point, because it's one of the only pieces of legislation that Congress basically has to pass, because we need to fund the military and, you know, keep Americans safe. So it's a bill, it's kind of a must-pass bill that over the last few years has really become a Christmas tree for many other items. So, you know, people kind of looking ahead to that as one of the only other major legislative vehicles moving for the year. There's also been some discussion from Patrick McHenry, who's the chair of the House Financial Services Committee, about trying to get safe banking and his stablecoin legislation into the FAA authorization bill. I think people are very pretty skeptical about that. I was in Senator McConnell's office yesterday, and I don't know that that idea was particularly received warmly in the Senate thus far. I think the Senate is still working through a number of items related to safe banking. But, you know, I think that is what we're going to be looking at from now until the end of the year. Just a few of these must pass vehicles and a couple pieces of really key top of the priority list legislation that we've probably already talked about in this podcast as getting through. But I do think that particularly for the credit union industry, the bigger threats are probably coming from the regulators with some slight threat opportunity, slight threat chances in the defense bill as well.
All right. So so the Federal Home Loan Bank, let's focus on that. It's still coming up. What's happening with the Federal Home Loan Bank review?
Yeah, well, I think that will be an area where we'll see what Sandra Thompson says this week. So far, I was at an event with some of the key people working on the rulemakings related to the report that they put out a few weeks ago. And there was a lot of questions about, you know, are they going to be putting out this rulemaking related to membership? And are they moving forward with any of these rulemakings anytime soon? We so far haven't seen anything, and we haven't heard a timeline on that. But I do think that particularly the membership rulemaking is going to be a big one for banks and credit unions that they're going to want to weigh in on. So more to come on that. But as of right now, they haven't given a timeline, but I would assume probably going to be sometime before the end of the summer.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what the Government Accountability Office just put out a report on the Federal Home Loan Bank, and you know, in that report they praised the Federal Home Loan Bank's response to the bank crashing. So Silicon Valley as an example. But isn't that's getting some pushback from Congress, right? Like Maxine Waters has already said that she's not happy with how that report framed up the Federal Home Loan Bank, right?
Yes. Yes. Maxine, Congresswoman Waters put out a press release highlighting that issue and expressing concern in that area. I mean, honestly, I think it's at this point something that's been debated. People have testified on this many times. The home loan banks have outlined all that they've done, and I don't think there's really any veracity in what Ranking Member Waters is raising here, because we've kind of done the postmortem on SVB, and the home loan banks provided the most liquidity they ever have in, I think, their history during that whole ordeal. Could maybe things have been done slightly different, or in hindsight, could maybe one or two different decisions been made? Of course, but I mean, if we see how that played out, I think things could have gone much, much worse if they hadn't been there. And I know that when I was watching that unfold, and when Congress was watching that unfold, there was a lot of concern that things were going to spiral, and we are going to start to see regional banks around the country closing and really creating, lots of issues. Nothing like that really ever materialized. So I think some of the naysayers that are looking back and saying that things weren't perfect, it's not a good use of time and resources, because things ended pretty much as good as they could have in a tough situation. And moving forward, the report addressed that issue. The home loan banks have addressed that issue, and everyone's cognizant of if something like this ever happens again, what the plans would be.
Awesome. Well, Leo, we're at time. I appreciate everything that you do to support Actimo and our community. Really enjoyed the conversation. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And thank you again to Lender Price for sponsoring our policy podcast series. And to all of you, we know your time is valuable. Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of Actimo's On Point podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, be well, my friends.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time at the Acuma On Point podcast. If not already, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. For more great episodes and information, be sure to visit us online at acuma.org. And to get the latest updates, head over to our LinkedIn page.